This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for asking. Also joining us this morning, former Washington Capital, Toronto Maple Leaf, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Morning, gentlemen. Doing just great.
And you guys, part of the Ohtani sightings on Friday?
Naz, I spotted him in Beaton, Santa Claus Parade yesterday.
you thought you saw him at the Santa Claus Parade? Well, you know, it was kind of an interesting day on Friday because the internet, social media, X, Twitter, whatever it's called nowadays, was rampant with Ohtani rumors. In fact, they had planes coming in from L.A.
Sushi parties.
They had sushi parties in downtown Toronto. Apparently, they were investigating all the sushi restaurants in downtown Toronto for reservations Friday night, and somebody thought he was going to be here on Friday. But, you know, all kidding aside, it didn't come to pass. He ended up with the Dodgers, and sort of makes a lot of sense. And but you got all the Blue Jays fans all excited, Naz, for one day, anyways.
Louis is a Yankee fan, so he must be happy with Soto.
Oh yeah, interesting.
Good. You got Soto.
Yeah.
We got Jack.
We got Jack.
Yeah, you got Jack. All right.
Exactly.
So far,
nothing.
Yeah, you must be happy, Lou. Hey, there was like 1A and 1B on the market, and you guys, the Yankees, got 1B or number 2. I think it's tough to put anybody in Ohtani's category with what he can do, but they certainly got the next guy on the list, Lou.
They definitely did. They got exactly what they needed, a left-handed bat. Young guy at the age of 25. Mind you, he's only got one more year of arbitration, right? So we're going to have to see whether they're going to pony up or not. Their top five guys are pretty good. Now you got to go after the bottom five. I know they still have some holes. And 1C, Yamamoto there is the next guy I think they're going to go after. But they definitely have to fill some more holes. Even with the signing of Soto or the trade of Soto.
Anyways, Ohtani, you know what? $700 million, actually in Canadian dollars, over $1 billion. Although I'm sure the state government in California and the IRS are going to get a good chunk of that. Don't know what the tax situation in California, but from what I've read, it's comparable to Canada. So sounds to me like Ohtani and his agent have made a lot of money for the U.S. and the California governments, but that's the way the world works. Interestingly, if he had signed in Florida or Texas, the tax, it would have been a lot less significant. But, you know, Ohtani obviously made a decision based on a lot of different factors. And you got to think, Naz, one of the biggest factors, he doesn't have to move very far.
Exactly.
You know, he's going to live in the same place, and rather than playing in Anaheim, he's going to be playing Chavez Ravine. So I got to think it makes a lot of sense for Ohtani to sign where he was in LA, and the Dodgers, you know, people are throwing around $700 million. How does it make sense? This isn't just a business deal. This isn't just a baseball deal. It's a business deal. And the Dodgers, you know, Ohtani is the one global brand in baseball. He has to be one of the most significant athletes in the world right now. He's on a par with Messi and Mbappe, and you know, you go down the LeBron, you go down the list. And perhaps in the Far East, in China and Japan, and you know he's huge, absolutely beyond belief, and that's going to translate into some significant revenue for the LA Dodgers.
Do you see a comparison with Tiger Woods and Ohtani?
Oh, absolutely. In North America, Canada, more so in the U.S., we tend to be North America-centric. Sometimes we don't realize what goes on in the rest of the world until you see guys like Ronaldo signing for $500 million and John Rahm signing for $600 million. We're going to talk about John Rahm with John Steinbrenner right after the first break, our great golf journalist. He's going to bring us up to speed. But Ohtani has to be one of the number one brands in the world right now, sporting brands. I don't even know if you'd put him up with somebody like Drake or Taylor Swift, but he's a generational transcendent talent. He's a Cy Young. I don't know if he's won the Cy Young, but he's one of the top pitchers and the top hitter. It's a combination that hasn't existed in baseball during our lifetimes. The only comparable is Babe Ruth, and you know, the world isn't today what it was in the 1920s. And he comes from a baseball mad country, Japan, who absolutely revere their heroes. So he's a generational transcendent talent and marketing opportunity. And I got to think $700 million by the time the Dodgers are done with this, it's going to seem cheap.
I believe the Jays really tried hard for this, though. I'm pretty sure that they had all the guns going, and Rogers was involved, too, but they just couldn't get it done because
you can't fight
City Hall. You can't fight Los Angeles. If you get your choice between Los Angeles and Toronto, and I love Toronto for all that it does to you, take Los Angeles all the time.
I don't disagree with that. Lou, any thoughts on that comparable L.A. Toronto? I think Ohtani's agent, CAA Sports, the top sports agency in the world right now, is, in my opinion anyways, the roster of athletes and celebrities they have, a masterful negotiation. They had everybody on the edge of their seats, and I'm sure they had the Blue Jays and the Dodgers in a bidding war, and whatever other teams were in that bidding war. So your thoughts on Toronto, L.A., that dynamic?
I think it's a great deal for the Dodgers because, being out closer to Japan, for one, all the money that he's going to be able to bring in through jerseys, commercials, advertising, and from what I'm reading, is a lot of the money is deferred, so it's going to be stretched out over a lot longer term than 10 years.
Correct.
I think it's a win-win for both situations. I'm not sure if he were to come to Toronto, how much of an impact. I guess I can't say that he would have made it probably the same kind of impact north of the border here.
It would have been phenomenal, but we're not the United States, and we're not the same market. Let's be frank.
Okay, well, there you go then. It's more or less, he couldn't have been in a better place other than if he went to New York, and I think even New York might be a little bit too far east for him. I think L.A. would have been the perfect trip, or even stayed exactly where he was.
Yeah, interesting. I give the Jays. I think the Jays made a serious, serious, serious push for him, and I give them all the credit in the world. They lost to, losing to the Dodgers. It's no shame in that competition. And from what I'm reading, they pulled out all the stops to try and make it happen. So, congrats to the Blue Jays for giving it their best shot.
Yeah, they have to go with Plan C now, and it's going to be a difficult task for them to get them on the field. Right? They're still a good team, but going to be hard.
Well, there's some issues down that they have to. They put the push on for Ohtani, but I got to think, as prudent managers, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. Even during those negotiations, you got to keep going forward, and you got to keep planning for next year. And they've got some holes to fill, some significant holes to fill. And hopefully now, whatever other plans they had, or whatever other free agents or whatever trades or whatever people they want to bring in, they've got to move into it. You can't put your franchise on hold just waiting for one guy to sign that's not certain. Before we're going to go to break shortly. Really quickly, guys, following up from our conversation of last week, Alabama made it to the college football playoff and created a lot of dissension in Florida State ranks and a lot of criticism for the committee based on their decision. I know you Alabama guys feel like, the committee got the best team, that Alabama's a better team than Florida State. And fortunately, we're not going to have this problem again. I can't see there being a serious controversy over whether a team ranked 13th or 11th makes the college football playoff.
It'll happen, though, Wally.
It'll happen, but not to the extent. Florida State, you know what? At the end of the day, you play the games on the field. Really quickly, I'll get my shot in, and then you guys can jump all over me. You got to evaluate teams over an entire season. They won undefeated Power 5 conference, beat some top 25 teams, didn't lose a game. You evaluate them over the course of the entire season. I don't see how you leave them out. I just don't see it, but I know the argument. Everybody thinks Alabama's a better team, but,
And the ratings would be better, too. Ratings would be better with Alabama.
Probably. Yeah, but that should have nothing to do with it.
But it does.
I know it does. But it should have nothing to do with it. It should be settled on the field over the course of an entire season. And it shouldn't just be who you think is going to win the games. I mean, if that's the case, get rid of the college football committee and just get Vegas to pick the four
teams.
That's
the only way my Bills will have a chance, Wally.
Just get Vegas. If that's your criteria, just get Vegas to pick the four teams. I think Florida State got jobbed, but that's fine. Alabama's a worthy team and probably will, in my estimation, will end up being the national champion. Guys, I'll turn it over to you for last comment on that.
Go ahead, Louie.
Well, Wally, you got all day here?
No, we don't have all day. I'll give you a minute and a half.
Hey, listen.
I got a bell here, by the way. Hold on. I found on my desk, Lou. When I hit that, you got to stop, okay?
Okay. When Florida State, I think they got screwed a little bit. Yeah. Alabama got screwed a little bit last year with putting TCU in. Right now, Alabama is one of the four best teams in the country. I think Texas is number one. I think Michigan is probably number three or four. And I think Washington. They left out two really good teams. Florida State is probably one of them because they went undefeated. I don't think they played that well at the end because they don't have their number one quarterback. And I think Georgia should be a little bit upset too, losing as they did one game, dropping from one all the way to six or seven. So there's a lot of things to go around here. But the committee got the four best teams that are playing right now. I really think that Texas should be number one on the rank. Probably Michigan the close two, Washington three, and Alabama four. And don't be shocked if you see a Texas-Alabama final.
I would be shocked. The interesting part about this entire discussion is, what, about 10, 12 years ago, we wouldn't have even had this discussion. It would have been Michigan and Washington in the national final. And in the old days, it would have been, we would have waited for all the bowl games and they just would have voted somebody. So this is a unique problem that will disappear next year with the 12-team college football playoff. Naz, in about 35, let's 1 minute, we can't not talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Interesting statistic, and I was going through this with you a minute ago, Naz.
Yep.
Leafs had a great performance last night. Played, I think, the way Sheldon Keefe wants them to play. Tight defensively. Not too many shots on Samsonov. A shutout. This is the way Keefe wants this team to play. Interesting stat that, we dump all over the Leafs. The three hottest teams in the NHL during the last 10 games. Listen to this one. You never would have guessed until I looked at the standings this morning. Number one, the LA Kings, the hottest team in the last 10 games. Guess who number two is? Lou, who's number two?
Edmonton.
No, last 10 games. Try again. Let me put you out of your misery.
Oh, Phoenix.
Toronto Maple Leafs. Toronto.
Really?
Would you have thought that?
No.
With the way we criticize the Toronto Maple Leafs and Leafs Nation, in the last 10 games, they've won 7 games, lost 1, and tied 2. Of course, a lot of those wins are in overtime. Yeah, we dump all over these guys. Defense sucks. The goaltenders are terrible. They've got the second best record in the NHL in the last 10 games and one of the best records in the NHL when you go percentage-wise basis.
Morgan Riley's really helped that defense.
It's the pizza, Naz. Yeah. It's the pizza. I'm telling you, it's the pizza.
He is playing unbelievable.
All kidding aside, he is.
Unbelievable.
Anyways, on that note, we've got to go to break. We're going to talk some of the earth-shattering news that happened in the golf world this week. And who better than the managing editor of Global Golf Post Biz and writer for Masters.com, John Steinbreder. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Play ball!
In baseball, winning takes 9. On the ice, you need 6 working together towards a common goal. Whereas success in sports radio requires a team of 2 who don't always agree. Venture Construction Services congratulates the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on 10 years of telling it like it is. More than friends of the show, they're fans who want to see Naz and Wally succeed for as long as Venture Construction has. Almost 30 years. 3 cheers for the winning team of Naz and Wally.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7. We also live video and audio stream on the internet at zoomerradio.ca. Later on in the hour, we'll have Joe Theismann. We're going to talk some NFL and Buffalo Bills football. But right now, we have the managing editor of Global Golf Post Biz and writer for Masters.com, one of the most acclaimed golf journalists in the world, our good friend, John Steinbreder. Good morning, John. How are you this morning?
I'm very well. It's not usual for us to be talking
during, I know.
the middle of winter about golf, but this has happened in a usual time.
Let me see if I can segue into my question here, John. I think when I say there was some earth-shattering news in the golf world this week, I don't think I'm embellishing it. Of course, I'm talking about the story about John Rahm, who's one of the top 3 golfers in the world, has agreed to join LIV Golf, the Saudi-backed tour. The number has been rumored between $400 and $600 million. There's still a lot of moving pieces to this story. There's a lot that still has to be unraveled. But this news isn't good for the PGA Tour in a lot of different ways. And we don't know how this story is going to ultimately develop. The PGA Tour and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia were supposed to had a deadline of December 30th, 31st of this year to finalize their transaction that was announced last year during the Canadian Open. And then John Rahm, one of the most outspoken defenders of the PGA Tour, his allegiance to the PGA Tour, decided to, for lack of a better term, jump ship. What does this all mean, John? What does this all mean for golf, for the PGA Tour? Where's this story going?
Well, that's a great question. And it's like you said, we just don't know where it's all going. I will say that this was a seismic shock for sure, especially coming a week after the ball rollback was announced that, much to my surprise, and I think a lot of people's surprise, that was taking up and including, you know, recreational players like you and I.
Yep.
In addition to the top elite golfers. And then you have this happen. And I was staggered because, you know, Rahm had been so adamant about staying with the PGA Tour. And, you know, with the negotiations that were going on with the Saudis and the tour itself, a move like this would be so disruptive. And I didn't think it was going to happen in the midst of all these conversations. So I was staggered like a lot of people. It was kind of like, really? And it's hard to say and what really is going to lead to, because I think Monahan and Yasser, the PIF, are going to meet this coming week, apparently. They're still talking. This is a hell of a shot across the bow from the Saudis. This is a hell of a negotiating ploy, if that's indeed part of what it is. I mean, it's a real power play on their part. It's got to really rattle the tour as they're trying to do this. And again, you know, you get back to the simple thing. They could be talking to all the private equity giants that they want to be, but nobody is going to be able to come close to spending and have the financial power that the Saudis are with that, you know, almost $700 billion PIF sovereign wealth fund. So, you know, they're, I think, deluding themselves if they think that they can get out from under the Saudi influence and desire to be a big player in the game of golf, because the Saudis are always going to be able to outspend. And if they don't get what they want, you know, who's next? And they will go after some other people because they've got a bottomless supply of money. And they've got apparently bottomless supply of interest and desire to become a major player in the world of golf. And it's going to be a very uncomfortable few weeks for Jay Monahan. I don't know how he survives this. I honestly don't.
No.
Sponsors are ticked off right now. And golf fans are furious because it's turned golf into just another pro sport with money being a primary topic of conversation and really sullied a game. I'm not trying to be naive about it, but golf always sort of stood out to me from the others. And now it's like any other pro event. And as a journalist, how can you trust anything these guys say anymore? I mean, it's a joke. I just wonder, when you go to tournaments and we travel, we spend time talking to these athletes and getting quotes from them and trying to understand them and talk about the game and talk about their role in the game. And it's just utter BS right now. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I stopped listening. I stopped believing what athletes say a long time ago, John. And they're scripted and they go out there and they read the lines that are given to them. So I'm not that part of it. I lost my naivete a long time ago when it comes to athletes. I'll turn it over to Naz.
I thought this merger was supposed to take place already, but I guess not. Who's causing the problem here?
Well, I think it's a combination. I mean, they were going to get a deal done by the 31st of December. I think that, that the Saudis wanted to put up, I think, $1 or $2 billion and get their leader, the PIF, Yasser, and I can't pronounce his last name, so yeah. I'm not even going to try, a seat at the board. But,
you know, I think the Torah was hoping that they would still be in charge of everything. And the Saudis, I'm sure, are thinking, why? We're going to put up a lot of money. We need to have a pretty good voice here. And then some private equity guys started showing up and saying they'd like to invest in this for-profit entity they're going to create. And I think that, I'm just speculating, I think the Torah is thinking, well, maybe this is a way around this, and we can somehow, you know, get push the Saudis a little bit to the side, have their money, but not have their deep involvement in the game moving forward, and then rely on these private equity guys to kind of help us fund what we're going to try to fund here, meaning we, the PGA Tour, speaking in their words. And I just don't think that, I think the Saudis finally said, that's crazy. I mean, you know, we had you pretty good last year. We did this to help us both out in the legal battles and this sort of poaching of players. But I think the Saudis are saying very, very clearly right now, you really want to mess with us? Try this again. Well, you know, we've got lots of this money, and it's not going to, it's no skin off our back to go get one other great top five or top 10 player and bring him over to the side here. So I thought it was going to be done by now too, but boy, is it in disarray at the moment. And you've got, you know, six players now on the players, on that council, the PGA Tour Players Council. So they've got the majority of that 11 person group. And I hear these stories of Patrick Cantlay, Mr. Personality, is taking a lead role in all this. But I'm wondering,
that's a scary thought.
What do these guys know about deals like this? I mean, so that it's really up in the air now. So I don't know what else to say. It is completely up in the air right now. And anybody who says they know what's going to happen has no idea.
There's way too many moving parts, and there's way too much that's happened in the background that may never come out. So it's almost impossible to speculate where this is going to end up going. Lou, real quickly.
I think John probably said everything that I was going to say. It's just the professional athlete now is going to follow the dollar. There's so much money out there right now that they're throwing around. There's got to be a number for every professional golfer out there that they can say whatever they want. And I'm like you guys, I wouldn't believe anything that comes out of their mouth. But it's, what do they say? Money talks, BS walks.
I got a sense that, you know, obviously money makes the world go round. It's got to be an incredibly important factor in all of this. But I there's something about this one that it's more than just about the money. I just think there may be the aspect of John Rahm on the PGA Tour. Let me throw this one at you, John. He's like one of the top three players in the world. He's Spanish. He's a global brand, and maybe he just felt that, you know, he'd be more of a focus of attention on the LIV Golf Tour, because on the PGA Tour tends to be U.S. centric, and you know, who knows what's behind that. And I guess the other guy you got to look at, all the spotlight on him right now is Rory. Who just resigned from the policy board, and I think he's moved back to the other side of the pond, if I'm not mistaken. The spotlight's certainly on him. What's his next move?
Well, that's a very good question about Rory. I mean, that would be the greatest turnaround of all time if he decided to hook up with Liv, and I just can't imagine his doing that. I'm sure he's just so exhausted from this involvement and what this is, you know, how this has occupied his time, as he's also tried to, you know, figure out how to win a major again, and now he's got a young family and blah, blah, blah. I think one of the things, and you talk about what's so odious about this, it's not just the money, because we're used to this in pro sports, and like you talked about, I gave up, you know, my naivete about that a long, long time ago. But what's weird here is it's just sort of the destruction of you know, the golf ecosystem as we've known it. And Norman and Mickelson, just to name two people, are so obsessed with sticking it to the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And that's what I find sort of too bad, is that if these guys are getting all the money in the world, God love them. But they really
at what
are.
Cost? At what cost?
They're bringing down the tour is what they're doing. And that's what I think is sort of pathetic about the whole thing. And Norman loves it, and I've never seen a smugger person in my life than the shot of he and Ron together. And And Mickelson's been talking about this, and Mickelson, who spoke about the obnoxious wealth of the PGA Tour, well, I guess he knows obnoxious. Agreed, he said the obnoxious greed. He knows that now in spades. And I just don't know what the end game is for these guys, and whether they've sort of unleashed this genie that is moving ahead in ways they didn't anticipate. You know, Mickelson wanted to remake the PGA Tour. I'm not sure there's going to be a PGA Tour to remake if things keep going down this road.
How much money was the PGA making it before? It must have been waddles of it, because who knows that total, right, John?
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, a private organization, and they'll talk about, well, we have all this money to charity we were going to give, now we can't give and all that. But I know one thing, which was just exemplified by Wells Fargo dropping its sponsorship moving forward of a PGA Tour event. The sponsors are furious, and they do not. They feel like they've been manipulated to have to pony up more money, and they are really not in the mood to put up more money for this. And it eliminates the charitable aspect to a lot of things. Not eliminates it, but certainly, you know, downgrades it a little bit. And I just think they're very uncomfortable going forward, and I think that's where Tour has a real problem, because I think these sponsors are going to start to leave in pretty good numbers down the road, they can't put up more money.
Yeah, the PGA Tour is on the precipice of being destroyed, and all the leverage in the negotiation seems to have moved to the Saudi side. Which is completely unfortunate. I don't know how Jay Monahan survives this. It's beyond comprehension.
He can't possibly survive.
It's beyond comprehension that he can survive this. And I think ultimately, the only way this makes any sense, and I don't even know if this is even, I mean, I think that, you know, the negotiation is, let's weaken the other side as much as we can so that we can make an ultimate deal. And I think that's what this John Rahm move is from the PIF side. You know, we got to weaken the PGA Tour so we can, you know, extract the last level of concessions we can possibly extract. But for the future of golf, the only way this will make any sense is if these tours merge at some point in time, just like the AFL and the NFL did, just like the WHA and the NHL did, just like the ABA and the NBA did, because LIV Golf is you can sign these guys for $1 billion because you got all the money in the world. That's fantastic, but nobody watches it. It's not golf, the way most golf purists understand the game. So, you know, they can continue to throw billions of dollars at it, but nobody's going to watch it. It's not golf the way you and I understand golf, John.
Oh, I mean, yeah, exactly. How can it be a sustainable business? But, you know, what is the bottom line for the Saudis? And is it, you know, is it truly sports washing? Is it truly giving them at a place at the head of the table of some of the most popular sports in the world? I don't know, but I agree with you. To watch on TV, it's you know, and even Rahm, I mean, all these guys have said it. I mean, this format is terrible. I think I have no interest in it.
I have no interest in it.
And the thing that's sort of sad is I watched when it was announced in the States, and I don't know if this is when you all know Canada got the first word, but Rahm was on special report on Fox News with Brett Baer, and Brett's a very good journalist, and he's a golf nut, and I was not happy with the interview from both Rahm's first comments where he loved team golf and he loves the format, and number three was finally the money, which that made me ill. I mean, really? And the other thing is, I don't think, you know, Brett pressed him nearly as much as he could have and should have about the money, about the turnaround. And what I worry about with this, the whole LIV thing, is these guys are so programmed to say certain things. I mean, the jacket, and they're only supposed to talk about certain things, I think, and it's very, very controlled, the message, because this is, funded by a country that basically controls media messages and doesn't have a free press and doesn't like people saying what the government doesn't like them to say. And that sort of bugs me as a journalist, I think, and it's also somebody who's always spoken his mind. Why, you know, the idea that, you know, we're getting programmed stuff from people who have very, very ulterior motives to just you know, promoting and putting on a great sport and the competition for the watch.
John, we're going to have to let you go. We didn't get a chance to talk about the golf ball rollback. We'll get you on early in the new year to talk about that one. We've got to go. We've got to get Joe Theismann on the line, and we've got to talk about some NFL football. So we're going to thank you.
Well, Joe's the best, and thanks for having me on, and you guys have a great holiday.
We will. John Steinbrenner, thanks so much, John. We're going to take it to break, and we'll be right back with Joe Theismann.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian, authentically Italian.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
Play ball!
In baseball, winning takes nine. On the ice, you need six working together towards a common goal. Whereas success in sports radio requires a team of two who don't always agree. Venture Construction Services congratulates the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on 10 years of telling it like it is. More than friends of the show, they're fans who want to see Naz and Wally succeed for as long as Venture Construction has. Almost 30 years. Three cheers for the winning team of Naz and Wally.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We're thrilled to have with us this morning Notre Dame, Toronto Argo, and Washington football legend Joe Theismann. Good morning, Joe. How are you this morning?
I'm great, guys. Good morning, Wally.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks so much for taking care of my business partner down in Florida. He's thrilled.
Hey, it was exciting to meet him, you know, and I had a chance to walk, and he says, "Hey, do you know Wally?" Wait, are you kidding me? Who doesn't know Wally?
Well, thanks for the plug, Joe, and I'll give my business partner a plug, Michael Carley. He was thrilled to take that picture with you, and thanks so much for making his day. Thanks, Joe. We've got so much to talk about. Never have enough time, but let's get. You know, having been on the show enough times with Naz and Lou, that these guys are all. Naz sitting here wearing his Alabama sweatshirt this morning. Let's go. Let's get real quick.
Did he have to take it out of the wash?
No, he wear during the fall season. He wears it every Sunday. He's got his cap too.
That was my question.
That makes
a good commercial. Take it out of the wash.
Yeah,
that makes a good commercial.
And he's got his Buffalo Bills cap. So that'll be our next topic of discussion. But did the College Football Committee make the right decision putting Alabama in and taking Florida State out?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. One of the criteria, I decided to do a little research this morning. One of the criteria that the committee uses, and they ought to be embarrassed, to be honest with you, is that it says here, it's players players who are unavailable to play, star players. Who makes that determination who's going to be the star of the football team? I personally felt like Florida State had a bunch of stars on the defensive side. So that's number one. Next, can they predict who's going to opt out in these championships to protect themselves going forward for the NFL? No, I mean, to me, you're an undefeated football team. Don't get me started so early in the morning. This was such an egregious slap in the face to Florida State and their players. Those young guys worked their rear end off. And the other thing is, too, is the third-string quarterback played in this game, but the second-string quarterback was going to be back. So just because Jordan Travis was not available, you decided to keep the entire Florida State football team out of the competition when you put an Alabama team in that converted a fourth down and 31 against an Auburn football team. One particular play put Alabama in, and the fact that you don't have any foresight keeps Florida State out. It's an atrocity in college football. It's never going to happen again because they're going to 12 games. But Florida State absolutely was, I don't know how, screwed. I don't know, maybe that's the word. They got absolutely hosed. I mean, and there isn't a person out there that follows college football that, unless you're the other, you know, unless you're Alabama or Texas, that would not agree with us. I mean, it's terrible. If I was a member of that committee, I would be embarrassed to show my face. I really would. Because it's wrong. It's just flat
you know
wrong.
What? Notre Dame minds must think alike. Anyways, I don't want to spend these Alabama guys here that I have with me, Naz in studio and Lou on the line, will argue with you till forever. But I don't want to spend.
The surface, real quick. This is the last thing I'm going to say about it. You got 2-1 loss teams and an undefeated team that can't play. What's 13-0? I'll tell you something. I'll put Florida State's offense up, defense up against Alabama in a heartbeat.
Yep.
You go head to head with them. I guarantee you, Florida State beats them.
Joe, you and I are in the same wavelength on this one. It's unfortunate, but fortunately, it won't happen again. I got to ask you this: since college football, I call it the professionalization of college football. We got nil money. We got transfer money. We got coaches making $12 million a year. We got players that are transferring here, there, and everywhere. We're now talking about universities paying serious money to some of the players. You and I and Naz and Lou, we, I guess to a certain extent, I hate to use the word old timers, or maybe we're purists, or maybe we're traditionalists, maybe is the better way. Has this gone too far, Joe? Obviously it has, but what's the end game here?
I don't know the end game. The end game is we don't have amateur sports anymore. There is no such thing as amateur athletics anymore. Unless you're, if you're in college, you're not in amateur athletics anymore. You just take a look at the decision that was made by, well, I'll give you an example, Notre Dame. You know how Notre Dame wound up going to the Tony the Tiger Bowl? they drew their name out of a hat. That's sophisticated. That's exactly how it happened. There were three teams that day. There were three bowls. Everybody wanted Notre Dame. So they drew their name out of a hat. But no, it started with the NILs. Which really goes back to Trevor Lawrence. You know, everybody wanted the people to get paid. If the school was making all that money, the players should get paid. Well, I still contend this: if you're a scholarship athlete at a university, you get room, board, books, tuition. Now, the University of Notre Dame, I believe, is $70,000 a year, give or take, as a scholarship athlete. You're telling me that's not being paid? If you don't have to pay over a four-year period, and people are there longer, but if you don't have to pay over a four-year period, that's $250,000 that you don't have to put out of your pocket. That's not being paid? That's one thing. I'm not antiquated enough to not think that there's something couldn't have been done. Why not give the athletes the money you want to give them to them, put it in a trust fund, And when they leave school, it's all theirs. But now it's got complete. Now you talk about the rich getting richer. The universities with the most money are going to, and they're talking about splitting them off as well and sort of starting their own thing. And what's a conference today? I get this question asked all the time. Should Notre Dame join a conference? Well, we are really part of the ACC, but only part, okay? Yeah. But why should we join a conference? Because every year the conferences change. You got USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. You know, I mean, Texas is leaving. I mean, why waste your time on a conference when we don't know what a conference is going to be? I really think that we have taken and allowed college football to be destroyed by money. I mean, everybody's going into a portal. Why do you think our quarterbacks that come into the National Football League struggle? I think part of it is because they bounce from school to school to school and never really get a good foundation of how to play the position. Now coaches have to take time at the NFL to teach them about the game of football when they really should have had it in college. And if you're going to turn this into professional football, don't limit the amount of time that coaches can have with the players. You know what they should do? Football, women's sports, men's sports, you should get credit for the time that you spend on the practice field.
Yeah.
It's just like a lab in chemistry.
No question. Joe, I want to take the conversation.
You should get a credit.
Joe, I want to take the conversation in the limited time we have left. We've got about 9-10 minutes left.
I'll talk faster.
Nobody talks faster than you, Joe.
Thanks, Paulie.
That's a compliment, Joe, that's a compliment. It's an absolute compliment. You're the one. You are, if not the most articulate guest we get on. You're number one in terms of articulation of anybody we ever talk to. So,
thank you.
Joe, Buffalo Bills, we want to take it closer to home. And I got my partner here. I want to get him in on this. I'm going to turn it over to Naz. He's proudly wearing his Buffalo Bills cap this morning. Naz and I drove down together. I'm not so sure this, but I'm going to turn it over to Naz.
How did the Bills match up against Kansas City today, Joe?
I think they match up well. Kansas City has not played its best football. And Buffalo has, if you look at Buffalo, you look at their record and you look at Josh Allen. Josh Allen is completing 68% of his passes, throwing 24 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. And not only does he throw the interceptions, but they come at very, very inopportune times. They come at places on the field and times in the game when it really affects the outcome. The Buffalo Bills, to me, are the scariest team in the potential of what could be a playoff team. Because if Josh Allen doesn't make the mistakes that he has made, this is a very good football team. They have a lot of pieces around him. It's just that he keeps making that one mistake, and it's decisions. It's not the physical part of it. Yeah, you know, you've got Josh Allen on one end of the spectrum who throws a ball 90 miles an hour. You've got Tua on the other end of the spectrum who throws the ball about 35 miles an hour. Which one's easier to catch? And I really look at the two, and you've got two very contrasting styles of quarterbacks. One, his guys make plays and can run with the ball. Josh throws the ball so hard sometimes, receivers almost have to protect themselves as they catch it. And it's a little more difficult to take off and run. Josh, to me, still has a lot of growth at the position of quarterback. We see somebody with this physical stature and this athletic ability and think, wow, he's there. No, he's not. Playing the position of quarterback is so much more than just throwing a ball. And to me, that's what I think. If Josh Allen can get right, this Buffalo Bill team can be extremely dangerous. And I think they're going to be dangerous against Kansas City today.
Lou, I'll get you an opportunity to get in here on some Bills or NFL talk.
Good morning, Joel.
Hey, Lou.
How does San Francisco, their offensive system with a quarterback that they have who probably throws the ball in the 40 to 50 mile an hour range, how do they make it work so well and make it look so easy?
First of all, I think Kyle Shanahan is the best play caller in football. That's number one, and been that way for a long time. They're, you know, Sean McVay out with the Rams, Matt LaFleur up in Green Bay, Kyle Shanahan. These are all guys that are young guys and are really terrific play callers. That, you know, obviously Dabo, what a difference that makes. Christian McCaffrey, what a difference that makes. You look at San Francisco's defense. You know, we've said this time and time again, guys, defense wins championships. And San Francisco has one. And with the reason why they have the losses they have is because Brock got hurt, didn't play. Trent Williams was out. Christian, you know, you've had different times where the key players have not been on that football field. I think it's the best team in football. I think they will win the world championship. They've been so close. But, you know, in the AFC, who's going to challenge them? I mean, I know Baltimore, you know, is, but Lamar Jackson, you know what Lamar Jackson's stats are? 13 touchdowns and 5 interceptions for the year in 12 football games. I think, you know, you look down at the AFC and you say, is Kansas City going to match up with them? You know, in the NFC, you're going to have Philadelphia and Dallas play tonight, which would be a good game. But I think the San Francisco 49ers are the most complete team in football. And I referenced, you know, Josh Allen and Tua. I could do the same thing with Brock Purdy. You have to get the ball out of your hands with the ability to anticipate where people are going to be. But the other part of it is you have to throw it in a way that people are going to be able to catch it. And, you know, Josh has just made, like I say, Josh has made bad decisions with the ball in his hands all year long. They've been so close. And if he gets that right, I'm telling you, they've become the scariest team in possibility in the playoffs.
Joe, you know, just really quickly, we're just talking about Brock Purdy, that, you know, this kid comes out of nowhere. And he looks like he may be on the way, except for an injury last year, or perhaps this year, may be on the way to leading a team to a Super Bowl championship. If I'm not mistaken, I think he was the last guy drafted.
He was Mr. Irrelevant.
Last year,
they were so close last year, remember?
Yeah.
In the NFC championship game, they were down to Christian McCaffrey at quarterback.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But my point, Joe, is Brock Purdy comes out of nowhere. Tom Brady's drafted in the 5th, 6th round. Joe Theismann's drafted in the 4th round, wins the Super Bowl. There's a litany of quarterbacks that are late drafters that become, you know, all-world quarterbacks. What are the scouts missing?
They're really not missing. What happens is you look at the young guys like Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis. By the way, Gardner Minshew has given them a chance to be a better football team, so they didn't have to grow. Look at the struggles of Bryce Young. But then look at C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud's going to be runaway rookie of the year. Houston's in the hunt for a playoff spot. They're not really missing that much. We don't have a lot of quarterbacks. I mean, the AFC, you've got Browning in Cincinnati, Flacco now starting in Cleveland, Minshew in Indianapolis, Adrian O'Connell for the Raiders. You've got Billy Zappia, Zach Wilson again, Will Levis, Mitch Trubisky. That's the AFC guys starting now. I really think that what happens is if you're drafted later, you're given a chance to learn the game. If you're drafted early, you're thrown into the fire right away. That's been the biggest difference. And it's not an economic decision. A lot of times it's the decision, I think, by ownership to say, we need this guy on the field. You know, is Bryce Young as bad as a 1-11 quarterback? I don't think so. But the bottom line is he's so young, he doesn't really know this game.
Yeah, he didn't.
There is a huge difference between college and professional ball.
Yeah, I guess Bryce Young didn't get the benefit that a guy like Aaron Rodgers got, which was a couple of years watching Brett Favre play.
Or Steve Young.
Or those, yeah, totally different experience.
Or myself, or, you know, different guys that have sat over time. But it's, you know, it's if you're drafted number one, usually by a football team, and there are the rare exceptions. I think C.J. Stroud is one. I always think back to Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh when he was drafted to that football team. But there's a learning process that goes along with it. And right now, if you look at the injuries in the National Football League and the starters that are down, other guys are forced to play. You know, you're learning on the job. And this is not a job that's easy to learn.
Yeah, No question. Joe, we're going to thank you. We're about, the clock is about to strike 10.
Oh, no, again?
Again, wow. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable how time goes by so quickly when we're on the air with you, because you've got a passion for football, and we've got a passion for sports, and it's the time flies by so quickly. It's such a pleasure to talk
I
to
will
you,
say
Joe.
This one last thing, Wally, is yes, I feel bad for the Argonauts. Yeah. You know, it was a – you know, you talk about a tough game. Hey, I've had tough games at the quarterback position. I know what it's like.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll be back next year, better
and
stronger.
We'll be back. And Joe, I, as always, I can't thank you enough for taking the time on a Sunday morning and sharing your passion and your insights with us. Thanks so much, Joe.
Enjoy being with you guys. Take care. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Thank you, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Lou, I'm going to thank you so much. Unfortunately, I can't get back to you. And Nez, I got to give you the last word. We got to get off the air.
Does anybody know where Claire Alexander is?
Is he still delivering milk? Anyways, thanks for that one, Nez. And I'm going to go right to Google. To all our listeners, thanks for joining us this morning. We hope you enjoyed the show and have a fantastic week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.